ago, the police staged raids in several Italian cities against anti-vax extremists, during which weapons such as knives and clubs were found.
Le azioni sicuramente ledono. Credo leda anche la visibilità che viene data.
These episodes have certainly affected our campaign. Let me add, however, that the media have purposely emphasized isolated incidents with the sole aim to criminalize all forms of dissent. So far, after weeks of protests, 8 people only have been put in custody by the police.
Anti-Covid Green Pass protesters at Saturday's rally in Rome were joined by supporters of far-right party Forza Nuova. An anti-vaccine passport protest was also held in Milan, with about 5,000 people parading in the city centre. Max Civili, Rome.
Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, has made a day-long visit to Tehran. During his short visit, he met with the new head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami. The Iranian official hailed the constructive talks he held with the head of the IAEA, Rafael Grossi, in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Speaking at a joint press conference after the meeting, Islami described the negotiations, mainly on technical issues, as constructive and said confidence building is what matters for Tehran and the UN nuclear watchdog.
Today, Mr. Grossi came to Tehran at the invitation of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, and we had good and constructive talks. The negotiations were held in a spirit of cooperation to create opportunities for enhanced interactions within the framework of the International Atomic Energy Agency's rules and regulations. Mr. Grossi will visit Tehran again in the near future, and the IAEA's technical team will also come to Iran to make necessary arrangements for the replacement of surveillance camera memory cards in accordance with the safeguards agreement.
But I'm glad to say that today we were able to have a very concrete result, which has to do with the continuity of the operation of the agency's equipment here, which is indispensable for us to provide the necessary guarantees and the information to the IAEA and to the world that everything is in order and that we are going to be able to assist Iran in its future negotiations in the context of the JCPOA.
Back in February, Iran and the IAEA reached a technical understanding under which Tehran agreed to keep the camera recordings from its nuclear sites for 3 months as a goodwill gesture in support of diplomacy, waiting to see whether the other parties to the JCPOA could manage to bring the U.S. back into full compliance with the deal. The agreements came shortly after Iran decided to stop its voluntary implementation of the additional protocol that allowed the IAEA to carry out short-notice inspections in Iran, denying the agency's inspectors access to the country's nuclear facilities beyond the safeguards agreement. The decision was made in accordance with the December 2020 law passed by the Iranian parliament, dubbed a strategic action plan to counter sanctions, that prompted the Iranian administration to restrict the IAEA's inspections and accelerate the development of the country's nuclear program beyond the limits set by the JCPOA. Iranian officials have cautioned the IAEA Board of Governors to avoid miscalculations at its upcoming meeting, warning that taking advantage of the IAEA for political purposes will draw a different response from Tehran. Saman Kujiri, Tehran.
In the limelight.
At least 1 million children in Afghanistan will suffer from severe acute malnutrition this year and could die without proper treatment, UNICEF Executive Director Henrietta Fore warned recently. Please stay with us for an article in this regard written by Christina Wilkie, journalist. This article is published under the heading 1 million Afghan children are at risk of starvation, UNICEF director warns. Stay tuned for more. At least 1 million children in Afghanistan will suffer from severe acute malnutrition this year and could die without proper treatment, UNICEF Executive Director Henrietta Fore warned recently. Nearly 10 million girls and boys depend on humanitarian assistance just to survive, Henrietta Fore said at a United Nations ministerial-level meeting on the humanitarian crisis unfolding in Afghanistan. Four implored the international community and wealthy nations to help avert further suffering after Afghanistan's U.S.-backed government collapsed practically overnight last month and Taliban took control of the country. She said, "Please help us." Four's remarks come at a pivotal time in the history of international aid to Afghanistan. Since the Taliban takeover on August 15th, most developed nations in the West have frozen their direct aid to Afghanistan. Western countries see the frozen aid money to Afghanistan as a key leverage point as they attempt to pressure the Taliban to establish a government that respects individual rights, especially the rights of women and girls. In the meantime, groups like UNICEF are getting a second look from Western governments seeking ways to deliver aid to Afghanistan's neediest citizens while bypassing the Taliban government. Four recently said nearly 600,000 people, more than half of whom are children, have been displaced by conflict this year in Afghanistan. Four also emphasized UNICEF's unique ability to operate in one of the poorest and most war-torn countries in the world. UNICEF has been on the ground in Afghanistan for more than 70 years, she said, adding, "We know that needs to be done for children, and we can get it done." The Taliban takeover of Afghanistan and the U.S. military withdrawal last month prompted many international aid workers to leave the country fearing for their safety. But UNICEF stayed and got things done, Four said. In the last 2 weeks, we have provided 170,000 people affected by drought with safe drinking water and deployed mobile health teams in 14 provinces to continue delivering basic health services for children and women, she said. During the last week of August, UNICEF provided 4,000 severely malnourished children under 5 with life-saving therapeutic treatment and road missions have begun. It remains to be seen whether the newly minted Taliban government will permit international aid groups like UNICEF to operate safely in the country. But Four insisted that life-saving aid, especially for children, must be viewed outside the political boundaries that divide governments and nation-states. She said, "We need to ensure aid is not politicized. Prioritization of funding decisions should be based on needs first. We must look for ways to deliver timely and sustain assistance at scale."
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked and
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. Please accept our condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashemi Nejad about the master of the martyrs, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Stay tuned.
انا ابی عبدالله علیه السلام قال امام صادق می فرمایند کان الحسین ابن علی ذات یوم فی حجر.
امام جعفر الصادق علیه السلام narrates, once Imam al-Hussein علیه السلام was sitting on the knees of Prophet Muhammad. Prophet Muhammad was showing much love and passion towards his grandson Hussein. Upon seeing this scene, Aisha, the wife of Prophet Muhammad, asked him, "Why do you love Hussein very much, O Prophet of Allah?" Prophet Muhammad answered, "How can I not love Hussein when he is the fruit of my heart and the light of my eyes? Be aware that in the future, my so-called Ummah will kill my grandson Hussein. Whoever visits the tomb of Hussein after his martyrdom will receive the reward of my Hajj pilgrimage."
قالت يا رسول الله حجة من حججك.
Aisha asked, "Is it only the reward of one of your Hajj pilgrimages, O Prophet of Allah?" The Prophet, in answer to this question and the following one, increased the numbers of the rewards to 90 Hajj pilgrimages of himself. From this historical dialogue between Prophet Muhammad and his wife Aisha, we can understand that how much love and passion the Prophet had for his grandson, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and how great it is the reward for paying visit to the tomb of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam after his martyrdom. Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRib English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashemi Nejad. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.com/Ian, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/EN.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Alleged September 11th mastermind Khaled Sheikh Mohammed and four others appeared in a military courtroom at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba for the first time since the coronavirus pandemic began. 20 years after the attacks, the U.S. military is still in the pretrial phase of persecution of the suspects. The five are accused of war crimes in the 9/11 attacks that killed nearly 3,000 people 2 decades ago. If found guilty, they face execution. Meanwhile, human rights advocates say the trial is full of legal obstacles and it may never reach a satisfactory conclusion. The defense attorneys have tried to challenge the military commission's legitimacy to overturn the case by arguing that the CIA tortured the detainees in a secret prison before transferring them to Guantanamo. The defendants' lawyers accused the U.S. government of bringing the five suspects to Guantanamo Bay to continue covering up torture. They said the government's secrecy about the use of torture is the main reason that indefinite detention still exists at Guantanamo Bay. Since its establishment, the notorious prison has been under fire for the so-called enhanced interrogation methods used on inmates to force them to confess to crimes they might not even have committed. Interrogation methods which international human rights advocates say amounted to torture.
Primarily because it's designed to be an institution through which the U.S. Subverts the law, through which the U.S. Is able to commit torture, is able essentially to go beyond what is usually permissible. So questions such as the one that you posed, while it is relevant in an ordinary set of circumstances, in an ordinary concept of the rule of law, the blunt answer is the rule of law and judicial process and the implementation of any judicial process for the U.S. at least, is irrelevant when it comes to Guantanamo Bay, or at least not a priority.
Experts say at the rate the case is proceeding, there could be another decade of procedural hearings. The Guantanamo Bay prison, also known as Gitmo, was established in southern Cuba in January 2002 to hold inmates in a place neither U.S. nor international law applied. Since then, Guantanamo has been synonymous with human rights abuses perpetrated by the U.S. government in the name of terrorism. At its peak, over 700 inmates have been held in the facility. However, only 7 have been convicted, including 5 as a result of pretrial agreements under which they pleaded guilty in return for a possibility of releasing from the base. Currently, nearly 40 inmates are incarcerated in Guantanamo without any charges. They are stuck in legal limbo, languishing there for nearly 2 decades. That's why their proceedings have been delayed at the pretrial state for several years. That justifies why Guantanamo Bay Prison is a symbol of lingering U.S. injustice. And while the Biden administration has said it wants to close the facility, the prison officials have confirmed that a $15 million expansion is underway, including the construction of a new courtroom and workspaces.
Well, it's only because of the power of the United States that it can continue to operate. It's clearly in violation of international law. It's and people are held without charge in many cases. And so it's just been a travesty, a disaster, a catastrophe for the people involved in it. And again, it's clearly not legal for the United States government to do this, to pick up people anywhere in the world, and then to hold them indefinitely, to abuse them, waterboard them, torture them in other ways, and consign them to what seems to be endless imprisonment.
With the prisoners stuck in a legal limbo, an international outcry against torture and injustice, the Guantanamo Bay prison continues to operate. It looks highly unlikely that Joe Biden will manage to remove what human rights advocates call a stain on America's global image. Following the 9/11 terrorist attacks, the U.S. administration, led by then-President George W. Bush, declared a war on terror and invaded Afghanistan in October 2001. 20 years later, the chaotic withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan marked the end of a protracted war that cost thousands of lives and trillions of dollars. 20 years of intervention in order to protect Afghanistan and to build a decent defensive military force for the nation. However, Kabul's pack of cards collapsed as the Taliban took over the country with no trouble. Afghanistan is a perfect example of the U.S. hegemony and military presence under the pretext of fighting terrorism. A big failure for a nation that feels it has to police the world. As of July 2021, the U.S. has more than 750 military bases in at least 80 countries worldwide. The actual number is probably higher, as the Pentagon has not published all the data. Washington entered the Middle East in a bid to hunt the man who they believed masterminded the 9/11 attacks, the Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden, who was harbored by the Taliban in Afghanistan. They later invaded Iraq in 2003. Up to 3 million U.S. service members have served in Afghanistan and Iraq since 2001, with over half of them deployed more than once. The U.S. also has had an active military presence in Japan since the end of World War II and in South Korea since the Korean War in the 50s. Nearly half of the U.S. military forces deployed abroad are stationed in these two countries with 80,000 service members. Elsewhere, Europe is home to some 60,000 American troops. Meanwhile, the U.S.'s most controversial and oldest military base abroad is located in Cuba, the Guantanamo Bay Naval Base. The U.S. has controlled the base since the end of 19th century. Since 2002, the naval base has contained a military prison to hold inmates in a place neither the U.S. nor international law applied. Since then, Guantanamo has been synonymous with human rights abuses perpetrated by the U.S. government in the name of terrorism.
Well, the impulse behind the United States transition from Republican democracy to empire started in the early 1990s with the fall of the Soviet Union, and that is when the acceleration of the U.S. military-based development expanded greatly, because the military-industrial complex, the general defense contractors, the bankers were seeking a transition to empire. And with the crumbling of the Soviet Union, they exploited these opportunities to try and position U.S. bases all around Russia with the agenda to cannibalize it, and had the self-supporting delusion that the United States was now the heir apparent to dominate and control the world.
In 2020, the U.S. was the largest military spender in the world and more than the next 10 countries combined, as it has spent $778 billion on its military. Over the past two decades, the U.S. has spent $8 trillion on its so-called war on terror, and only cause more instability across the globe. The U.S. military intervention as a whole is responsible for the creation of Daesh terrorists. If the U.S. hadn't invaded Iraq in 2003, and if Washington and its allies hadn't backed opposition groups and al-Qaeda affiliates in Syria, Daesh would never have formed. Following the 9/11 attacks and the declaration of war on Afghanistan in 2001 and Iraq in 2003, the U.S. saw a large spike in the number of its troops abroad. At least 800,000 Americans served in Afghanistan and more than 1.5 million in Iraq over the past 20 years. The human cost of the U.S. so-called war on terror is estimated to have killed more than 900,000 people, mostly civilians.
It not only violates the sovereignty of individual nations where the U.S. has forcibly impregnated itself in and established military bases in these countries, but it more importantly violates the fundamental core of our human existence. God made men and women to be free and to seek Him and to enjoy life on earth, not to exist as a slave to another. And the United States and its military expansion and its ambitions for bases really is a transformation of slavery.
It seems the U.S. aim behind all these military bases is to exert its own foreign policy directives under the pretext of policing the world. Although supported by international legal agreements, the presence of foreign troops violates a country's sovereignty.
The coronavirus pandemic has not only cost countless lives, but has hit the world economy hard. The United States, which has the world's biggest economy, hasn't been an exception. The U.S. is the world's worst hit nation by the pandemic. Under former President Donald Trump, the country launched a program called Operation Warp Speed to facilitate and accelerate the production and distribution of COVID-19 vaccines. U.S. pharmaceutical companies developed several vaccines and rolled them out to the country's population. Trump's successor, Joe Biden's administration, set a target of vaccinating 70% of the country's population, at least partially, by the 4th of July. However, the country met the target a month later, despite generous incentives given to Americans.
At least 40% of the U.S. population is a victim of a lot of silly conspiracy theories about the vaccine and are adamant about not taking the vaccine. It's a big problem in the U.S. that's been stoked by social media and QAnon and, you know, career right-wing politicians who are manipulating it all for their personal gain. So the U.S. Is confronting with this real problem.
The vaccination program proved effective at bringing down the daily COVID cases and deaths, but up to a certain point. The highly infectious Delta variant of the coronavirus sent a new wave of cases and fatalities across the world. Scrambling to contain the spiraling outbreak, President Biden announced new mandatory vaccination plans on Thursday.
I will sign an executive order that will now require all executive branch federal employees to be vaccinated. All. And I've signed another executive order that will require federal contractors to do the same. If you want to work with the federal government and do business with us, get vaccinated.
But in addition to saving lives, the U.S. government is aiming at saving the economy, too.
Well, it certainly would help because we have a problem going on of a lot of workers not wanting to go back to work now that the COVID Delta variant is accelerating in a lot of places in the country. That was obvious in the last month's job report.
The mandatory vaccination program has triggered a backlash from American conservatives. Hours after the Democratic U.S. president announced a coronavirus vaccine mandate for federal workers, Republicans lambasted the decision, suggesting that it's unconstitutional. Figures, including Republican National Committee Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel, threatened to take legal action against the Biden administration. A majority of the critics are questioning the administration's authority to declare such a mandate. Back in March, the Democrats in the U.S. Congress passed a bill for a $1.9 trillion coronavirus stimulus package without a single vote from Republican lawmakers. The plan was intended to send direct payments of up to $1,400 per person to the majority of American households, extend a $300 per week unemployment insurance supplement, and put funds into vaccine distribution. The Republicans argued that the package was superfluous as the economy was reopening anyway. They believed the economy would suffer down the road considering how big a figure the bill earmarked.
Well, you know, that's a false argument. What the Republicans are really about is that they don't want to spend on these stimulus programs, because if the stimulus programs spending amounts to significant fiscal stimulus, then they'll have to raise taxes on corporations and investors, which means they'll have to reduce some of the generous Trump tax cuts of 2017 that gave $4.5 trillion in tax cuts to corporations and wealthy individuals and investors. They would have to raise taxes, and that's really what it's about. They don't want to raise those taxes. They don't want to take away the Trump tax cuts if they're going to have to spend a lot on social programs.
With the United States COVID-19 figures rising in recent weeks, economic indicators are expected to be negatively impacted. Biden's unprecedented and aggressive move to make vaccines mandatory for a considerable portion of the American society can highlight the gravity of the risk the U.S. economy is currently facing from the deadly contagion.
Israel is stepping up its hawkish warmongering rhetoric against Iran. The chief of staff of Israel's military has said the regime is putting more extensive plans in place for when it decides to, quote, attack Iran. Aviv Kohavi claims the regime has, quote, greatly accelerated preparations for action against Iran's nuclear program. He says a considerable increase in the budget has been allocated to that purpose, with more intelligence and operational capabilities assigned. Kohavi also said Israeli military's current main objective is to stem what he called Iran's presence in the Middle East, with an emphasis on Syria and elsewhere. Those operations are taking place all over the Middle East, against Hamas in Palestine, against Hezbollah in Lebanon. Earlier this month, Israeli Minister for Military Affairs, Benny Gantz, said in an interview that the regime was prepared to attack Iran, saying that, quote, we are at a point where we need to take military action against Iran. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has implicitly acknowledged that the regime has carried out covert attacks on Iran's peaceful nuclear program, and brazenly said that the regime would keep on with such attacks.
And the reason behind its stepped-up hostility toward Iran, and a very open hostility, is that Israel seeks to be the lone superpower, mini superpower of the region, as a junior partner of the big superpower, the United States.
Iran has already condemned Tel Aviv's reckless rhetoric against Tehran. Late last month, the Iranian envoy to the United Nations warned Israel against any adventurism toward the Islamic Republic. In a letter to the President of the United Nations Security Council, Zahra Ershadi, the Deputy Permanent Representative of Iran to the UN, warned the regime against carrying out its threats of attacking Iran over its peaceful nuclear program. Unchecked, such continued unlawful acts and systematic provocative measures, with all their serious ramifications, would undoubtedly further destabilize the region and also endanger international peace and security.
It was not just when Netanyahu, with all of his ridiculousness, his cartoonish presentations and so forth, his obsession with Iran's development. It's the whole establishment, the whole Israeli establishment, that has this extreme hostility toward Iran and wants to continue to take action in the hopes of provoking something.
Naftali Bennett's visit to the United States last week, Tel Aviv and Washington agreed to form a high-level team to tackle the Iran nuclear issue. Israel's threats against Iran are believed to be aimed at influencing stalled nuclear talks between Tehran and other world powers.
Well, Israel definitely wants to prevent any possibility of success for the a return to the JCPOA, the so-called nuclear deal. And so it's moving in this direction.
However, analysts believe Washington's options outside of diplomacy with Iran are limited. A military option would be unacceptable to the top Pentagon brass, who have engaged in enough war games and other scenarios to recognize that there is no workable military solution. It is believed that Israel presumably recognizes that a military option would also be counterproductive.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, thankfulness. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Since there's no form of worship better than thankfulness to Allah, He has singled out this kind of worship from other kinds of worship, and has singled out those who practice this kind of worship, saying, "Very few of my servants are grateful." Chapter 34, verse number 13. Brothers and sisters, let's try to be amongst those very few. Because if you look around, there are many who say all the time, you know, as a habit, that I'm thankful to Allah, Alhamdulillah, I'm thankful to Allah. But when Allah says there are very few, this means that thankfulness that He is mentioning is something beyond and above and beyond this verbal thankfulness. Complete thankfulness is to sincerely repent your inability to convey the least amount of gratitude and expressing this by means of your sincere glorification of Allah. This is because fitting thanks is itself a blessing bestowed upon the bondsman, for which he must also give thanks. It is of greater merit and of a higher state than the original blessing which caused him to respond with thanks in the first place. Therefore, every time one gives thanks, one is obliged to give yet another thanks, and so on and so forth. And this while absorbed in his blessings, in Allah's blessings, and unable to achieve the ultimate state of gratitude. This thankfulness requires another thankfulness. So you thank Allah for giving you the tawfiq and the blessing of being thankful to Him. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing thankfulness. The question is, for how can the bondsman match with gratitude the blessings of Allah, and when he match his own action with Allah's, while all along the bondsman is weak and has no power whatsoever except for Allah? I mean, is it humanly possible for us to do it? Allah is infinite. His blessings are infinite. How do we give Him infinite thanks? We are finite. It is a very interesting dilemma that we are all stuck in.
are we not? Brothers and sisters, think about this. This is going to take you to a whole different level when you try to quantify the number of blessings Allah has bestowed upon you, from your physical being to your spiritual and ethical being, from the surroundings that you are being provided with, from the material resources, from the material blessings to the spiritual blessings. You cannot count them. So how is it even possible for us to be thankful to Allah? Allah is not indeed of the obedience of His servants, for He has the power to increase blessings forever. Therefore, be a grateful servant to Allah, and in this manner you will see wonders. And then keep asking yourself, can we ever thank Allah the way He deserves to be thanked? Is it even possible? Do we have the potential to be thankful enough that fulfills the requirement of being thankful? This is some food for thought for all of you and for me.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Floating concert venue has entertained music lovers in London. Renowned pianist Masayuki Tayama and his partner started a project to play on a canal boat traversing the city's waterways 2 months ago. Since then, they have performed 9 concerts, and their upcoming performances are already sold out in months ahead. The couple came up with the idea after living on a narrow boat with a digital piano.
This is the piano boat, which is the only canal boat of its kind. It was built to our specifications as a floating concert venue. So we have a brand new Steinway grand piano, and here we give musical experiences for people on the canals.
The artists believe the experience is very different from playing in regular concert halls. They say recitals on the boat create a unique interaction with the audience and it feels friendlier. A small fairy pitch invader has interrupted a cricket match in Ireland. A playful puppy ran into the field of a semi-final match and caught the ball. The scene caused laughter amongst those present. After a few minutes of chasing the dog, players managed to get the ball back. The funny video has gone viral on the internet.
A Cayman and a local tour guide in Bolivia's Amazon region have formed an unlikely friendship with bond going viral on the internet. Although people are warned to stay away from Caymans, Alejandro Gil has struck up a friendship with one special reptile named Jesus. Despite the Cayman's carnivorous nature, it shakes his tail and allows Gil to pat it on the head after being fed. At 4 meters long, Gil, however, admits that getting close to Jesus does still make him nervous.
My knees shake when I work with Jesus.
I'm always scared and very careful, and also respectful to tourists. Guides in the Pampa de Yakuma and across Bolivia consult with tourists before undertaking an activity. If they agree with it, then we do it. If one person is not in agreement with an activity, then we don't do it.
Gil says they are only able to get in touch with a caiman in a dry season when the river is at low water levels. They lose the reptile in January when the river rises. Caimans inhabit Mexico, Central and Northern South America, from marshes and swamps to mangrove rivers and lakes. Their diet consists of a great deal of fish, but caimans also hunt insects, birds, and small mammals and reptiles. A new initiative has been launched to turn the spotlight on the misery of Syrian refugee children. Little Amal, a giant puppet depicting a young Syrian refugee child, has arrived in St. Peter's Square in Vatican City. This 3.5 meter tall puppet has traveled all the way from Syria to Turkey, Greece, and Italy. It will then go to France, Switzerland, Germany, Belgium, and the UK to focus attention on the urgent needs of young refugees. Syrian refugees, especially children, are in a dire situation after being driven from their homes due to the conflict in their country. Archaeologists have discovered the largest ever bronze mask in an archaeological site in China's southwest Sichuan province.
This is a large bronze mask we unearthed from the central park of the number 3 ritual pit. The widest part, from one tip of ear to the other, is 136 centimeters, and the height is around 75 centimeters. It can be regarded as the largest bronze mask unearthed in Sanjingdui, and even the largest in the Shang and the Shu dynasties.
The mask was found together with other cultural objects such as ivory and bronzeware. These items needed to be removed first before handling the mask, which made the extraction process complicated. Restoration work is underway on the largest bronze mask taken from the site. The relic is believed to be thousands of years old, dating back to the Shu period. The site is an archaeological treasure mine belonging to the Bronze Age of over 4,000 years ago. The area was first discovered in China in the late 1920s. An Australian zoo has welcomed two baby bilbies, an endangered species. Their birth has brought joy and hope to zookeepers and wildlife enthusiasts. The baby bilbies were born in Taronga Zoo in Western Sydney. Zookeepers named the two male joeys, Molly and Cliff, after a national park that once was home to herds of this animal. The birth of the joeys has raised hope among the zookeepers of reintroducing the species to the wild. Bilbies were once found across 70% of Australia's landmass. They are believed to have inhabited Australia for up to 15 million years.
Chameleons changing color is one of the most fascinating traits amongst living creatures. Now, can't humans make a robot with the same capability? In a science lab in Seoul, a team of engineers have created a robot that mimics the color-changing ability of the famous lizard. The researchers have made the skin with a special ink that changes color based on temperature and is controlled by tiny flexible heaters. The head engineer says creating a wearable device that can actively change color and patterns was the main goal of the study.
The pattern of South Korea's military uniform is made for woodland and certain colors. So if you wear this military uniform and go to the desert, you can be easily exposed. Actively changing colors and patterns to match different surroundings is the key of camouflage technology, and we made this possible.
The total thickness of the flexible, multi-layered artificial skin is thinner than a human hair. The scientists envision that their research can be adapted for military uniforms to help soldiers blend into their surroundings. It can also be used for aesthetic purposes such as fashion, exterior of cars and buildings, as well as future display technology.
Visitors and staff of a French zoo have been amazed by the surprise birth of two African lion cubs. The babies, a boy and a girl, were born 2 weeks ago in Amnéville Zoo. Their birth was unexpected due to their father's advanced age of 17. The cubs will live under constant surveillance for a couple of months so that their health is reassured. According to zookeepers, they are currently in good health. The Amnéville Zoo has asked people on social media to name the newborns.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The German capital Berlin turns colorful as the annual mural festival has brought artists together to display their works around the city. Artists have instilled new life into neighborhoods with giant murals that attracted hundreds of visitors. This year's event was resumed under the motto Home Street Home after its 2020 edition was canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Organizers say the paintings invite people to discover the city as a gigantic open-air gallery.
The Italian city of Venice has held its annual historical regatta festival, attracting hundreds of spectators. People wearing costumes rowed their colorful boats and gondolas through the city's Grand Canal. The participants reenacted the city's history by carrying people dressed up as the King of Venice and his wife up the canal. Some of the riders also put their strength to the test by racing each other throughout the day. The regatta dates back to the 13th century and has been held every year in September.
An extraordinary concert has entertained hundreds of people in the German city of Dresden. Musicians performed underwater while five steamboats accompanied them with their whistles. The City Symphony Orchestra organized the event in an attempt to boost up people that is exhausted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Residents welcomed the program, describing it as a glimmer of hope. They believe that the unusual concert was good for heart and soul.
Young generations are becoming more concerned about our planet and seem determined to contribute to make it environmentally friendly. A great example is this Parisian boy who spends a lot of time fishing metals out of rivers and canals in the French capital. Good for him. 11-year-old Raphael uses magnets and grappling irons to fish metal objects out of the Seine River in Paris. Over the past 2 years, he has taken hundreds of bikes, scooters and shopping trolleys out of the water. The boy says the practice was initially a hobby for him, but it eventually turned into a reasonability and a method to raise awareness about climate and environmental issues.
My goal is to raise awareness so that a maximum of people do something. They don't have to do what I do, but at least do something. Even if it's not necessarily cleaning up cannons, it could just be picking up a cigarette butt.
Rafael has also fished some very rare items out of different canals, including handguns, pieces of jewelry, and an artillery shell. An exhibition is therefore being held in Paris where Raphael's findings are going to be put on display. The young environmentalist has also been awarded the Medal of Paris, a prize belonging to the residents who accomplish a deed concerning the city. Brazilian researchers have discovered a substance that could be used as a drug against COVID-19, and you may not like where they found it. A group of scientists have come across a potentially life-saving molecule in the venom of a kind of Brazilian pit viper. It is a peptide or a chain of amino acids that limited reproduction of the coronavirus in monkey cells by 75%. The peptide can be synthesized in the laboratory, so there is no need to capture more vipers. Now the researchers will evaluate whether the molecule can be used to create medicine for treating people with COVID-19. Thousands of cows have descended from their summer quarters in the Swiss Alps to enjoy the warm temperatures of lower heights. The cattle herds spent 7 weeks in the Alpine mountains, grazing at an altitude of nearly 2,000 meters. Their journey down started before sunrise and took almost 5 hours to complete. The cows, which couldn't make the trek due to injury, had already been carried down using trucks and helicopters. Farming has found an alternative look in the Netherlands, where cows produce milk on an eco-friendly floating farm. That may seem a surreal image of Rotterdam, the largest port in Europe. A herd of cows peacefully feed on board of what is known as the world's first floating farm. They live on the top floor of the three-story farm, while their milk is turned into dairy products on the other two floors. The floating farm opened in 2019. The owners say it aims to show the future of breeding and farming.
You must realize that the world is under pressure. Therefore, we have less and less land, agricultural land. Our idea is that in this way, we can actually create agricultural land close to the city and also adaptable to the climate.
The floating farm is seen as a good alternative for normal farming in the Netherlands. That's a country with scarce land while being threatened by climate change. The farm's owners have also applied eco-friendly methods to make it durable and self-sufficient as much as possible. The methods include using solar panels and feeding the cows with grass from sports fields.
An Australian cyclist has become the first woman in history to pull off a front flip on a mountain bike. Caroline Buchanan landed the front flip at the OD9 cycling event in the German city of Birkenfeld. The maneuver won the former two-time Olympian the women's best trick title in the event. This was the first time the Nines featured a female category. The annual event gathers the world's best slopestyle and freeride mountain cyclists to Germany. A spectacular light show has mesmerized people in a Greek capital, Athens. 200 colorful drones performed a short harmonized display illuminating the night sky. Their colors and shapes were changing alongside music tracks. The show, organized by the Athens Cultural Center, took place 120 meters above the National Opera and Library.
www.parstoday.com/en